So we have some great questions. Lenny, how does Apple Hill arrange for all the international students to get to New Hampshire? I imagine paperwork, visas, airplane tickets.
We have somebody that works full-time in the office making sure that everybody gets here and gets here safely. Part of what we do when we have, when we want to really seek out certain students from certain populations, we not only give them free tuition, but we pay for their travel. So we first have to raise all the money, which is really important, by the way, for an arts group like Apple Hill, is to give us money. And then if it's a visa issue, they have to go to the embassy in their countries. So if you're Palestinian, you have to go to Tel Aviv, which is already a big problem. And last summer, and I don't know why, but very few of our international students could get visas. So we had to actually turn down a little over eight, I think we had 10 students that traveled. So in Peru, they were close to Machu Picchu, which is hours away from Lima. They had to, you know, travel to Lima, go to the embassy, pay X amount of money. Well, actually, I paid for it. And then they got rejected. That's horrible. So we talked to Jean Shaheen after all this happened in her office, and they helped us this year make sure that every student that we got from abroad got a visa. So she helped us. She wrote a cover letter. We made up a whole packet. We discussed what kind of packet to present to the U.S. Embassy when they're going to get their visas, and it worked. Everybody got their visas.
Yay.
Yeah.
Great. Success.
Yeah.
Yay. This is a double question. You can choose from it what to say. Which is the most challenging of the five skills? And is there any distinction of skill, difficulty, or ease based on a person's culture or where they're coming from?
I don't know if there's any one that's easy or hard. I think for some reason, it might be listening to people. You know, a lot of people want to make a point. They got to get their point across, you know. And when you're playing chamber music, that one example we gave where they were playing in unison, or when Sophia had the solo, you know, Betty can't make a point because she's going to be insensitive. She's not listening. So I feel like listening is probably a very important one, but I think they're all equally important because they all work kind of in unison together to make a successful performance. I think human beings are human beings. I don't care where they're from. I think everybody comes to Apple Hill with their own experience of playing chamber music. Some people have never played before, so they don't even know that they have to sit and watch somebody and start a piece together. So it mostly depends on the experience, I think, rather than a culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So since changing behaviors is difficult, how much of a background check do you do when you select your students for your 300 spots? Are personalities already less confrontational? What do you do if there is conflict?
That's a good question. I think for me, when the five of us, the quartet and I, get together and we're trying to figure out who to get to Apple Hill, a big part of it is Apple Hill. Like, are they like Apple Hill? Meaning, will they like to live in a cabin in the woods with five other people? Are the bugs going to drive them crazy? You know, and those are all, are they going to be willing to be part of community and share everything? And usually, if they have those qualities, if we can see what they're like, usually they're going to be a good, they're going to work well in the music together. Of course, somebody like Nanor, you know, she was recommended to us by a conductor that we had met when we were in Syria. And we just called him and said, we like somebody from Syria. Maybe they live in the United States. And he was just like, she was the first name that came up. And so, of course, we said, yes, you know, we're not going to argue about that. And yeah, she's fantastic. Conflict. There really isn't any conflict at Apple Hill. There really isn't. If there's a conflict, it's to get them to bed at the curfew. It's like midnight, go to bed. It's hard. But you know, if you're playing music, you have to love each other to play music, especially chamber music. You just cannot have any animosity. And if you do, we have a faculty person that's gonna be there to say, oh wait, you need to be listening to each other, or you need to watch each other, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think music or classical music camps are so popular at this time of decreasing popular attention for classical music?
Why is classical music?
Why is your camp so successful, or why are other camps so successful?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think we have it set up in a way where people can come for a short amount of time, because we have five different sessions that are about 2 weeks in length. So our faculty, we can get really good faculty because they don't have to stay all summer. They can go somewhere else. So they'll come to Apple Hill for a couple weeks, and they'll be like, this is awesome, I want to come back. Students, the same thing. The most we want a student to be at Apple Hill is for two sessions for like a month, because it's so intense. So I think the length of time is part of it. I don't know, I think classical music to me is about art, and it's about creativity, and it's about a statement that you're making. Popular music, which is great, I love popular music, that's about commerce. It's about selling things. It's about creativity, but there's a big commercial aspect to it. So I think going to a camp that's about art, it's about creativity, and in order to do that, you have to dig deep in yourself to create, to be authentic. So one of the things I always say at the beginning of the camp is, we want you to be yourself, we want you to be authentic. When you're authentic, you don't have to strategize to figure out how to fit in. We love you the way you are. And it gets people to really start to dig and be creative. And I think the classical music helps that kind of attitude. That's what I think.
Okay. Last question. Who were some of the people who started the Playing for Peace program, and where has it gone besides the Middle East?
Well, we go all over the world now. Like I said, it started as a conflict resolution in one specific area, but now it's about us. It's happening right now. If you're listening to me and I'm watching you, we're doing Playing for Peace. It's those skills. So it's about everybody. But we started in the Middle East. We had to work really closely with the State Department. Once the State Department found out how successful it was, we started to go to Ireland, Republic of Ireland, Northern Ireland. We went to the Caucasus area, we went to Southeast Asia, we were in Malaysia a few years ago, we've been to Cyprus, and it's all the different populations that are in conflict with each other. So when we went to Cyprus, the Turkish population is in the north of the island, the Greek are in the southern part of the island, and they had absolutely nothing to do with each other. So we would go there, and they would videotape, two in the Turkish section would videotape, and the two in the Greek section would videotape, because they couldn't sit and rehearse together. So they would look at the videotape and play together. And the first time they actually sat down, the four of them, was at Apple Hill. Actually, I was their coach. They were at Apple Hill. It was the first time they had ever sat face to face with somebody else from that other population. But I feel like what happened when I started was, like, I noticed that everybody was coming to Apple Hill, and I think it's because we had this philosophy of, like, hey, we'll take you, we accept you, we love you. And everybody started to come, and that's when we started to think, well, everybody in this world is facing or dealing with some kind of challenge. So Playing for Peace really is about everybody, and that's what it's become now.
Yeah. Thank you again, Lenny and the trio, for sharing your time and expertise with us.
Thank you very much.
Our program next Sunday will feature Abdi Noor Eitan, who will be sharing his story as published in his popular book, Call Me American, My Long Journey from Somalia to Maine. Abdi is a dynamic speaker who has been featured on NPR's This American Life.